And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com.
Tickets for IU basketball are available online at iuhoosiers.com or by calling 866-IU-SPORTS. The three remaining winter break games are December the 18th against Fort Wayne, December 21st against Tennessee Tech, and December 28th against Youngstown State. IU basketball tickets make for great holiday gifts. Be sure to visit us online at iuhoosiers.com or get your tickets by calling 866-IU-SPORTS. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, we reflect on the whiplash of the past week of IU basketball, the win over Notre Dame, the horrid, disappointing loss to Fort Wayne. Our guest is Mike Miller from the Bloomington Herald-Times. Alex talks with him, gets his thoughts on the Notre Dame win and the Fort Wayne loss. Before that, Alex and I chat, and we dissect that loss to Fort Wayne, talk about the positives, which was the positive, I guess, the play of Zach McRoberts, and then the many negatives coming out of that and what they mean, not just for this season, but for the program moving forward. All of that and much more on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. Like most sports fans, you've probably found that buying tickets to sports and concerts too can be a complicated process. But here's the thing, there is a better, simpler way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events because with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can actually buy or even sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed, and there is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will help you get closer to the action for a great value. In fact, SeatGeek helped me get closer to the action last season when I saw Yogi play here in Dallas. I'll probably go see him again this year. And same thing for my wife this offseason. I got her concert tickets as a gift, and she really enjoyed it. And we did it all with SeatGeek because SeatGeek is designed to make the ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find you amazing deals. Now, here is what you should do next, because best of all, Podcast on the Brink listeners actually get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase, so there's that little bonus. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BRINK today. That's promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right, well, Alex, kind of a crazy 3 days there in the land of IU basketball. You go from the high of beating Notre Dame and that thrilling comeback at the Crossroads Classic to the low of another 20-point drubbing at home to an in-state foe. It's kind of hard to make sense of. And I guess if we needed any type of sign about, you know, maybe how the rest of this season is going to be and perhaps the roller coaster that we're still on as we transition to this new coaching staff, these last 3 days kind of gave us a good indication that the roller coaster is still here.
Yeah, I think most of us thought, and probably most fans as well, believe that, you know, after beating Notre Dame, that Indiana would kind of go into these three games and use them to really work on some things, continue to get better, and head into conference play with maybe a 9-5 record and some confidence. And I think what we saw is this team is not, ready yet to handle the success of, a big time win. There was a lot of nice things written about them, obviously, on Saturday. It was a tough bounce back opportunity. And they didn't show up. I mean, there's just no other way to put the performance on Monday as anything other than they didn't show up. Now, you got to give Fort Wayne credit for making the 17 three-pointers, but, once a team, and we saw this with Indiana State, and I think most people thought it wouldn't happen again. I know John Gassaway's thrown out some crazy stats on, you know, the likelihood of a team coming into any given building and making 17 three-pointers, and it's not a very high probability, but they did a lot of the same things in this game that they did in the Indiana State game, and it shows, I guess, the vulnerabilities to an extent of the pack line defense. I don't necessarily, you know, a lot of people have asked me on the forum the last couple of days, is this what we can expect to see regularly with the pack line? Is it susceptible to threes? And I answered that in, you know, the best way I could, which is I think that there are some vulnerabilities in the pack line to three-point defense, but when it's executed properly, there's a connectedness on the court from the defensive players, and there's kind of a basic understanding of the concepts. And right now, if you go on the site, Ryan did a really good film session on the game, and if you just kind of watch frame by frame some of the things that Indiana is doing defensively, they're not executing what I would call a pack line defense or any really defense that's connected at all at this point. I mean, there's just so many breakdowns, and I think the thing that Fort Wayne did, and they spread the ball, they spread the ball out, they spread their players out, and they moved the ball, and you know, IU really had no idea how to guard them when they were on the perimeter, and it was really just a clinic in terms of guys getting open and shooting wide open three-pointers. So I think you give Fort Wayne credit for making the shots, but when you dig deep and you look at some of the shots that they got, you have to point the finger at IU and say that it just simply was not good enough defensively.
Well, and what's frustrating about that is the defense has been getting better. I mean, Indiana played really good defense against Notre Dame, a team that is elite offensively, certainly better offensively than Fort Wayne, even though you might not have been able to tell that if you just watched those two games. But, you know, that Notre Dame game was the fourth straight game that Indiana had held their opponent to under their season average in points per possession. So the defense has been getting better. But against Fort Wayne, like you said, the team just kind of didn't show up. And so to me, you know, and I've tried to think a lot about this since that game, and we talked about it on the post-game show, you know, when you're kind of trying to assess blame for a game like this, is it more on the players? Is it on the coach? And, you know, I've tried to think, okay, you know, from Archie's perspective, what could he have done differently in that game? And, you know, I don't know, maybe there's an adjustment here or there that he could have made to, you know, guard that pick and pop a little bit better, something that might have stemmed the tide. But at the same time, like I said, you're coming on the heels of four games where your defense has been pretty good, and now all of a sudden you're having breakdown after breakdown, where to me, it just seemed more like guys who were a step slow mentally and physically, less about the actual scheme itself, and more about guys just not being locked in that particular game to executing the scheme that they needed to. And that's why I've kind of fallen more on the side of, you know, the leadership of this team and the upperclassmen kind of failed them more than the system did. Where do you kind of fall on that when it comes to trying to assess, you know, why this happened again after, obviously we saw the Indiana State game, but I think most of us hoped that that kind of performance had been left back in November, and now we're all kind of rattled a little bit thinking, holy crap, this team is still capable of going out there and playing like that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, obviously the coach has to take some of the responsibility for the performance because he's ultimately the leader of the team. I mean, but once you get on the court and the game is going, you have to have somebody that steps up and says, after they knock in a couple, says, guys, this, you know, this isn't going to happen anymore. We need to stop this from happening. And once Fort Wayne got confidence, Indiana's body language was almost like, you know, we're just kind of going through the motions, and we're gonna lose. I mean, it almost looked like they were resigned to the fact once Fort Wayne started hitting shots, the closeouts were weak at best. You know, it was basically like Fort Wayne had taken the punch to them, and they weren't gonna punch back. And to me, that's on the upperclassmen on the court to pull guys together and say, this is not going to happen. If you remember a few years ago, Yogi Ferrell's final year, I can't imagine a team with Yogi Ferrell on the court, his leadership and kind of what he did to bring that team together after their early season struggles, there's no way he would let a team come into Assembly Hall and beat them by 20. There's just no way that that would have happened with him on the court. So I look at guys like Colin Hartman and Robert Johnson, and I say, these guys have been through situations that pretty much that are across the board in college basketball in terms of they've seen everything. They've been to the Sweet 16. They've won a Big Ten title. They've also been on the losing end of some really poor performances, and so those guys just have to be more mature and more and just, you know, I don't know exactly how you define leadership, but to me it's, in the face of adversity, how do you pull guys together and say, hey, we need to turn this around. We need to change momentum. We need to do something. And I saw nothing out of those guys that suggested that they did anything like that in that game. So, you know, obviously it's up to Archie to have them ready to play and have them execute a game plan, which did not happen. And then it's also on the players when the game is going on and the momentum is taken by the other team. How do we figure out a way collectively to grab it back? Because it's not going to be Al Durham that pulls everybody together and says, hey, guys, let's stop this. It's not going to be Freddie McSwain. I mean, he's a senior, but he doesn't have the experience or the kind of the voice on the team to say this isn't going to happen. It's got to be the guys who have been in the battles before, who should have at least the respect of the locker room. Where when a young guy is in the locker room and looks up and Robert Johnson's saying something, that should mean something to everybody on the team. And I saw nothing to suggest in the second half of that game that either of those guys, Hartman or Johnson, pulled the guys together and said, we got to stop this. Something's got to change. I mean, they just got completely run off the court. And I think that was the most disappointing thing was after a win that was so so big for Indiana on Saturday, an impressive win, a good performance. And I'm sure if Indiana would have beaten Fort Wayne, we would have spent a lot of our time in this podcast talking about the Notre Dame win. But they kind of, you know, the goodwill that they'd built up, you know, 2 days after that quickly was gone because of, you know, to me, an immature approach to the game. And that's disappointing.
You know, one guy who I did think was trying his damnedest to lead by example and even tried to be vocal at certain times, you know, the broadcast caught him, you know, kind of imploring his teammates to get going, was Zach McRoberts. And I think when you look at the one positive to me that came from the Fort Wayne game, it's, you know, Zach again played 24 minutes and, you know, look, he wasn't blameless. You know, he had a couple of turnovers. And, you know, if you want to know how bad the game was, you know, Zach McRoberts turned it over and at one point kind of threw his hands up in the air and didn't get back on defense. And Archie had to implore Zach to get back on defense. So, you know, mm-hmm. when even he's having a moment like that, you know, kind of tells you where the team is at for that game. But, you know, I thought Juwan Morgan, he did an interview with Justin Albers and Max Bielfeldt on their podcast. And I thought he had a really interesting insight about Zach. He said in practice, you know, they always, all the players are interested to see what team Zach is going to be on when they scrimmage, because no one wants to play against him because he just plays so hard and he moves so much and he's so active. And I thought that's a real interesting insight to why Zach McRoberts has now played 55 minutes the last two games. And you can certainly make the argument that, you know, a guy like Zach, limited as he is athletically and on the offensive end, kind of lowers the ceiling for this team. But given the major weaknesses of this team, you know, consistency of effort, consistency of focus, you know, defensive awareness and attentiveness, he fills those gaps so well. And so I thought for him to go out, you know, score 9 points, you know, make a mid-range shot, make a three, I don't know if that's stuff that he can carry into games against better competition, but at least if he can present just the threat of shooting, you know, that might help him a little bit, you know, be a little bit more productive guy on offense who can be even better with his minutes. Because, I mean, I've got to say, you know, you look at the last two games, obviously Juwan Morgan has been the go-to guy and the best player. I don't know if anybody rates higher than Zach McRoberts after that. And I think he's put himself in a position to continue getting more minutes. And I think it's a good thing in the sense that Archie is trying to establish a culture, establish a standard for who gets to play and who gets the minutes. And you look at Zach McRoberts right now, and he's not doing anything to dissuade Archie from continuing to get those minutes, and no one else is really stepping up and following that lead consistently enough to say, I'm going to grab these minutes. So I, again, not much at all to get excited about from the Fort Wayne game, but the one positive that I took from it is I thought Zach McRoberts continued to play well and expanded his game in an important way that can make him a more productive player, more of a threat as he continues to get those minutes against better teams.
Absolutely. I thought he brings it and has brought it every time that he's got on the court this season, obviously, and last season when he did get in, he had his moments where he made positive contributions. And I think he should continue to play a lot and have his role continue to grow. But I think probably, and I don't know this, but you know, if I was on the coaching staff, I think it would be frustrating to see a guy you're happy for Zach, but you're also a little disappointed in some of the other guys who are more talented, more athletic, more capable of making an impact on the game, losing minutes to Zach because because of their inability to do things like make the simple play and play hard and bring consistent effort on a game-to-game basis. And that consistency is something that these guys can look at Zach McRoberts and say, hey, you know, my shot might not be falling on any given night, but if I bring the effort that Zach does every game, good things are going to happen. And I think, you know, everyone looks at McRoberts and like, well, why is a walk-on playing? I think early in the season, people were like, well, he shouldn't play. He's a walk-on. And, you know, we have to look to the future. We have to build. But Archie's trying to win now with this team, and he's going to put the players on the court that give them the best chance to win. There's been a lot of questions on, you know, why isn't Justin Smith playing? Why isn't Clifton Moore playing? Why are certain guys playing more than other guys? And I think it's all just based on who the coaching staff feels is going to give them the best chance to win in that situation. And right now, Zach McRoberts is near the top of the list of those players. And I think it's good to see him get rewarded for doing things like hustling and getting his balls on, or getting his hands on loose balls. In the Notre Dame game, he got 7 offensive rebounds. That wasn't based on anything other than him having good awareness and having the ability to kind of get in there and mix it up. And I think it's something that, you know, his teammates can look to him and say, this is kind of something that we need to be doing too on a consistent basis if we want to win, because Indiana's not going to be able to just get on the court and beat teams with talent alone. They're going to have to not only, shoot the ball better and play better, but they're going to have to win because they're playing together as a team and also playing hard consistently. And we saw what happened when they did do those things on Saturday against Notre Dame, and we saw what can happen when they don't do those things on Monday with Fort Wayne. There's not a big margin for error with this group.
I want to talk about my biggest fear with this particular team and the program in general, and then talk a little bit about Deron Davis, too. Before we do that, though, quickly want to remind everybody to make sure that you go to HoosierProud.com. I think at this point, we've probably missed the date where you can get items for Christmas, but if you want to get some belated Christmas presents or, you know, bring something to your New Year's party for the Indiana fan in your life, or just the person from Indiana, go to HoosierProud.com because they have a ton of really, really cool, unique designs that are inspired by unique elements of the Hoosier State. They also have officially licensed IU gear. So if you want, you know, an IU football shirt or an IU soccer shirt or an IU basketball shirt, you can get those at HoosierProud.com. And obviously, if you want to support Inside the Hall, you can go there and get the officially licensed Inside the Hall logo t-shirts as well. All of that available at HoosierProud.com. And one of the great things about ordering from HoosierProud.com is they're very philanthropic and they support Indiana-based charities. So a portion of the revenue from t-shirt sales at HoosierProud.com does go to support Indiana-based charities. And even better, you save money when you go to Hoosier Proud when you use the promo code BRINK. So B-R-I-N-K. Use that at checkout and you'll get 15% off the entire order. Not just one shirt, not just the Inside the Hall shirts, but 15% off of your entire order. Again, the promo code is BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and the website is HoosierProud.com. So, Alex, let me tell you my biggest fear for the rest of this season and for the future of the program, and that's the backcourt. You know, you mentioned Yogi Ferrell earlier, and obviously Yogi had some inconsistencies early in his career, but by his senior year, he was as consistent and as much of a rock as you can have. And when you have that as your most experienced player, your best player, and your lead ball handler, man, it can smooth out a lot of other issues, and we saw that. And what we saw last year and what we're seeing this year is maddening inconsistency from the Indiana backcourt. I mean, that's really about the only thing that is consistent, is that they're inconsistent. And you're seeing it from the older guys, both Robert Johnson and Josh Newkirk, who have struggled with their shot. You know, they struggled with their decision making. Robert now has 12 turnovers in the last two games, which is unconscionable. And you're seeing it with the young guys. You know, Devontae Green has had some big moments, but if you kind of look at his numbers across the board, the assist rate is up, the turnover rate is a little bit down, but overall, you know, his shooting numbers are less than they were last year. I don't necessarily know that he's taken a big step forward yet, if he's taken a step forward at all. And Al Durham is a freshman, and, you know, a lightly regarded freshman, I guess. That seems a little harsh, but not a guy who is expected to come in right away and play big minutes. So the fact that he has struggled as the season has moved along isn't that shocking. So you look for where this team can improve and get some consistency. I think it has to start with the backcourt. And so my fear is, I wonder if these guys are capable, because we've seen a lot of Robert Johnson and Josh Newkirk, and they just have been inconsistent players. I don't know what will get them to start being consistent all of a sudden. And then when you start peering into the future and you remove those guys from the roster, and now you look at Devontae Green and Al Durham as your most experienced guards going into next year, it starts to become a little bit worrisome, you know, and you start to think, you know, Rob Phinisee better be ready to really take on a lot of the ball handling next year. And I suppose with every 50 point game he puts up, makes you feel a little bit better about that. But the backcourt is a real issue for this program, and that's not just a this season issue. It dates back to last year, and I don't know that there's an immediate fix this season, and I don't know that I feel fully comfortable with how it's shaping up yet for the future, obviously until we see, you know, kind of what the final recruiting classes are going to look like next year and the year after. So do you have any positive thoughts to assuage my concerns in this area, or is this just something we're going to have to deal with and that Archie's really going to have to deal with as he looks to rebuild his program?
Yeah, I think when you look at the rebuilding job ahead of Archie, one of the biggest challenges for him is going to be bringing in better backcourt players. I mean, that we the last year, obviously, of Tom Crean's tenure, I think one of the reasons that he's no longer the coach at IU is he didn't have a replacement for Yogi Ferrell who was suitable. He brought in Josh Newkirk, who to me is a backup player in major college basketball. He started out of necessity last year. He started out of necessity this year because there's nobody really better than him around. And I think that falls at the feet of, you know, obviously Crean. The recruiting that he did later in his tenure at IU, he never got anybody on the roster who was going to, and I'm not saying there was somebody who could replace Yogi, but someone who was going to be a backcourt guy on the team that could lead. He obviously got James Blackman, who was a great scorer, not a point guard though, and point guard is really the key ingredient for winning in college basketball. You're seeing that right now with Oklahoma. They got Trae Young, who is a McDonald's All-American, and he's basically single-handedly destroying other programs. I think he had something like 26 points and 22 assists last night, which is incredible. Yeah. And so, you know, Rob Phinisee is going to have a lot on his shoulders, but I think it speaks to the fact that Indiana needs more guards on the roster next season, regardless of what happens with Romeo. Would it be great to get Romeo? Obviously, yes. But I think they're going to need to get somebody else, even if they do get Romeo. Do you go into next season with Phinisee, Romeo, Durham, and Green? Do you really feel like that's enough in terms of guards on the roster? I think they're going to have to explore what else is out there, whether that be the grad transfer route, whether that be, you know, there's a coaching change somewhere in the spring and somebody reopens, whether that be, you know, there's somebody that they identify over the course of the season. Because, I, you know, and if they don't get Romeo, they could be in a situation where they need to get two guys. Because I just don't think Devontae Green, Robert Phinisee, and Al Durham is enough to get this program next season to be a lot better in the backcourt. I mean, obviously Robert Johnson has been a good college player. I would not call him a great college player. He's been inconsistent in a lot of ways. He's been, I feel for the most part, a pretty good defender throughout his 4 years, but Indiana needs somebody that with the ball in their hands can create for others and can take care of the ball. And right now there's nobody on this roster that has that. And you're asking a lot of Robert Phinisee if next year you're just going to hand him the ball and say, here you go, it's your team. So I think they're going to have to get a couple of more guards on the roster next year to feel comfortable going into the season.
One last question for you, Alex. And this is something that I debated with Ryan on the postgame show after Notre Dame, and it's an issue that came up again after the Fort Wayne game, and that's the play of Deron Davis, who, you know, as recently as a couple weeks ago, when you talked about what is this team's identity, what can this team really hang its hat on, and you kind of know from game to game you can count on, it was, you know, playing through Deron Davis in the post. And now we come up on these last two games, and Deron, I believe, has a total of 9 points, and really just hasn't been able to get himself involved consistently. He's played a total of 38 minutes, and it hasn't necessarily been because of foul trouble. He picked up the early ones against Notre Dame, but only had one foul against Fort Wayne. And I understand that the way that those two teams play offense presents a big challenge for Deron and makes it hard for him, you know, defensively to match up. And he might not be able to play as many minutes in those games because you get a little bit better matchup defensively with a smaller lineup. I get that. But he's still out there for 38 minutes. He's still, you know, your second most efficient offensive player. And yet, you know, he's not getting very many shot attempts. Only 3 against Notre Dame. You know, he did have 6 against Fort Wayne, but it never really felt like he was in the flow of that game. And so I guess I have 2 questions. Number one, what does Indiana need to do in these types of games to get him more consistently involved? Because I would posit that even though he's at a disadvantage on defense, shouldn't he then be at an advantage on the offensive end against those kind of teams that are, you know, kind of playing a lot of outside in and maybe don't have a great post presence? Why aren't we feeding him more? And at the same time, the second question, you know, at what point, Arch, you know, we talk about the responsibility for production that Archie has mentioned, and Juwan Morgan has obviously, you know, shouldered that very well, and he's producing every game. At what point is that reasonable to expect from Deron as well? And I get that he's only a sophomore, but at what point is his responsibility for production matchup independent? Because I think not having him to really count on down low these last two games has really hurt Indiana when it's come to offensive continuity and confidence level.
Yeah, he's definitely important for many reasons. The first part of your question, obviously, that getting him involved, a lot of that starts with Deron demanding the ball, making himself available, and then also not picking up quick fouls. I feel like lately in a couple of the games, he's, I think going back to the Louisville game, I don't know if this happened in Notre Dame, but he's been in foul trouble early. And that was one of the key things that we talked about early before the season started. And was he going to be able to play without fouling? And right now, I kind of give him an incomplete on that. You know, he hasn't really learned to consistently stay on the court without fouling. And so that needs to get better. The other thing I think he needs to do is rebound a lot better than he has at this point. Yeah. He's not an explosive guy. He's not a guy that's going to finish above the rim. But he's usually the biggest guy on the court. If he can get a couple of offensive rebounds and putbacks, that could really kind of jumpstart his game offensively and give him a little bit of confidence. I do think they need to maybe look for him a little bit more, but he's got to be active in that too. It's not just, hey, we're gonna run down the court and clear it out and give it to Deron. It's got to be within the flow of what they're trying to do. And I think for the most part, they've done a better job this season than in previous seasons of establishing the post. The other thing in terms of just his consistency, you're asking, you know, when is it kind of fair to hold him to the same standard as maybe some of the other guys? I think that time's right now. He's starting. He's playing major minutes. He's been around now long enough in the program and obviously has put in a lot of work in the off season that he needs to be held more accountable in terms of just his production on a game-to-game basis. He can't have a game like the Notre Dame game, and then followed up with what he did against Fort Wayne. I mean, that's two straight games where he hasn't been a huge focus or a huge factor for the team. So he's definitely a guy that needs to play better. I mean, right now, if you look at this roster and you ask me which guys are playing to their potential, I would tell you Zach McRoberts is one for sure. Juwan Morgan had been until last game, which, you know, I know he had a double-double, but if you watch some of the things he did defensively on film session, you're going to...
He was bad on defense.
You're gonna say, you know, this was not good. But those two guys really are the only I can look at and say, hey, they've played well. You know, Al Durham, too, I think, for a freshman to do what he's done with what was expected out of him. But everyone else, for the most part, needs to play better. Need to play more kind of, I wouldn't say smarter, but, you know, just stick to the game plan that you're being asked to execute. And I think what happened in the Fort Wayne game, and I may have alluded to this in five takeaways, and I tried to ask Archie after the game about the pace, and maybe I didn't ask the question in the best way, but I thought in the first half, Fort Wayne dictated the pace. It was a 40 possession half, which is, for those of us who follow kind of the average possessions the team has in a game, that was definitely a game that was being played at Fort Wayne's pace. And Indiana tried to stay with them in that, and that's not how this Indiana team's been playing. They've been playing a lot slower, and I think playing that fast contributed to the fact that they had 12 turnovers in the first half. I think they got sped up. I think they didn't stick to the things that have made them successful this season, and I thought they never really established themselves in terms of the pace. And so that's the other thing that needs to be consistent on a game-to-game basis. I think Archie's established that his teams are going to play a little bit more deliberately than Tom Green. I think that's fine. You can still have a really efficient, really good offense playing that way. But when another team comes onto your home court and has a 40 possession half against you in the first half, and you try to run with them when you're the better, more talented team and you're right there in the game, that just can't happen. And I think that kind of speaks to the lack of leadership on this team as well, the lack of somebody on the court at the point guard that can kind of control the tempo of the game. Indiana just does not have that right now.
Yeah, just to put some numbers behind what you said, Fort Wayne, they're averaging their games 74.8 possessions, which is the 23rd fastest in the country. Indiana typically plays 67.6, which is 263rd. So you can see the big difference there. And that is indicative of, I think, the lack of mental toughness and focus for Indiana, that you could allow a team like that to come into your home and dictate the pace. Because look at the flip side of that. How many times have we seen Indiana teams in recent memory, and we know Indiana, you know, wanted to play fast, have this high-octane offense, you know, go into a place, you know, like a Wisconsin or even like a Penn State, and, you know, have the pace totally dictated by the home team to where Indiana's having to play a totally different type of game. That's the kind of switch, you know, mentally from a consistency standpoint that Indiana's got to make, because that just can't happen.
Absolutely.
All right. You ready to bring Mike Miller in here and talk more about this?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Let's do it. Coming up next, Mike Miller from the Herald Times.
So it's been an interesting couple of days in the world of Indiana basketball. With Saturday's win over Notre Dame, I think a lot of people that follow the program, fans, had a lot of optimism that quickly ended on Monday with Indiana's stunning loss at home to Fort Wayne, the second time that Indiana has been beaten at Assembly Hall this season by 20 points by an in-state mid-major team. To help us make sense of that here in the second segment of this week's podcast On the Brink, we welcome Mike Miller of the Herald Times. Thanks for taking the time, Mike.
Absolutely, anytime.
So first, I want to go back to the Notre Dame game. A lot was written in the aftermath of that game. A couple of national guys, you know, wrote about it being Archie Miller's first marquee win. There was obviously a lot of excitement for fans to win a Crossroads Classic game, particularly, I think, after the past couple of weeks, Indiana being so close in so many games, particularly the Duke game, the Louisville game. And I'm curious from your perspective, watching the game on Saturday. Did it feel like, or did it look like to you, a turning point for this team in any way?
Yeah, I think there was that feeling. I think it was fair to have that feeling because, you know, it's kind of interesting kind of just going back a couple of years ago to that Notre Dame game in 2016 and the way that kind of really spurred the turnaround that we saw in January when the team, you know, really started clicking. You know, OG Anunoby emerged as a guy. You go back with that season, you go back to that Notre Dame game and just the way they kind of clawed their way back in the second half of that game. And certainly it was much the same on Saturday, you know, coming back from a 13-point second half deficit and just gritting out and buckling down and looking like the kind of tough-minded team that Archie Miller has been known to produce. It felt like at the end of this five-game stretch, you know, I feel like we saw a team that maybe except that Michigan game really was taking some valuable steps forward, and it just seemed like this fitting endpoint to that really, really tough stretch of five games there. It seemed like things were coming together. You're a little over a month into the season, and again, you know, you were seeing steady progress, and although it wasn't always turning into victories, I mean, they were still playing some good basketball in that stretch, and you know, it was interesting to really look at that Notre Dame game because really you probably had only Johnson, Morgan, McRoberts, and probably Green were the only guys that were really giving you really solid good minutes consistently throughout the day.
Right.
And you're just thinking, again, for the most part, imagine if this team really starts clicking and they start getting guys just showing any sort of semblance of consistency for longer stretches. So yeah, it was just this point in the season early on where you're just thinking, all right, this is what this team can be, even as flawed as it is. And then, you know, 48 hours later, it's just kind of it. I think right now, as I'm still digesting Fort Wayne, it just kind of comes back to this point that Archie brought up after the Indiana State game. It's a soft team. I think right now it's a team that gets up when the lights are on and you got a big time opponent in front of you, but still doesn't understand that when you're facing a Fort Wayne, when you're facing Indiana State, I mean, this is a Final Four type game for those teams. And if you don't understand that, if you can't comprehend that, you can't come to play. I mean, look, Fort Wayne was coming off a Saturday game too. I don't think
right. He
had anything to do with the other day. It's all mindset. And this team right now just doesn't have that kind of winning mindset.
Yeah, in my Fort Wayne preview, one of the things that I mentioned was the potential for a letdown coming off the Notre Dame game. And I think that's sometimes looked at as something we talk about in sports as a cliche. You know, you come off a big win and you're going to have a letdown. But the one thing I pointed to was that many of the players on this Indiana team were there, like you and I were, in War Memorial Coliseum last year when Indiana lost to Fort Wayne. And so my thought was that these guys would have remembered that and have come out maybe with a different mindset on Monday. Were you surprised at all at just how, I don't necessarily think lackadaisical is the right term, but the lack of energy that Indiana came out with on Monday, particularly after the fact that they lost to Fort Wayne last season?
Yeah, it's just one of these situations where, you know, I don't want to get too stuck in hyperbole here, but I mean, it was almost unfathomable. Like you said, I mean, you got, again, senior backcourt guys and just a team that was there for that game, that was present and knew what that loss did to that season last year. How do you not show up for the rematch on your home court? I mean, and coming off the Notre Dame game, but again, it all just points to mindset. It's just not a very tough minded team. And it's a team still with many warts, both with roster mismanagement from the previous regime and, you know, guys just who aren't capable of really settling in and taking the reins and taking control of the roles that have been presented to them. But yeah, it's exactly what it is. I mean, it was shocking. And I don't use that word lightly, to really see that. I mean, they just got whipped on their home floor against a team that embarrassed them, just absolutely embarrassed them last year, in Fort Wayne. It was shocking to actually see that. I don't understand how that happened. And I think that when you looked at this team coming into the year, you thought, all right, well, this is going to be a transition year, but they've got some veteran guys. They've got some experience on this. Maybe if all goes really well, maybe that veteran presence on this team will really play a huge role in steering the ship in the right direction this year. But so far, that just has not consistently been the case. I think you're you're getting it in decent amount of spurts from guys like Hartman, and I think Juwan Morgan is really, beyond his play, is emerging as one of those guys who's starting to find his voice. But, you know, then you look at the other guys like Rob Johnson and Josh Newkirk, I just don't see it. And that's where I think it's disappointing for a lot of folks to really see that void that just continues to be unable to be filled for whatever reason.
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit in the first segment with Jared, but one of the keys, maybe I didn't ask the question the right way when in the aftermath, that, you know, I asked Archie about the pace of the game in the first half, but I thought one of the things that Fort Wayne did that really kind of threw Indiana off in the first half was it was a 40 possession first half, and I thought Fort Wayne with the pace and how they played kind of sped Indiana up, and that led to, you know, 12 turnovers, and there was just a lot of things in terms of execution that they didn't do particularly well. Did you see, you know, the first half, did you kind of see that as the what ultimately led to maybe the second half? Because it felt like Indiana let Fort Wayne get too comfortable in the first half, kind of dictate the pace of the game, and then once some shots started going in the second half, it almost looked like Indiana lost confidence and lost a lot of fight down the stretch. You know, I saw a lot of bad body language down the stretch. And once the three started going in, it was like it got to a point where Indiana didn't look like they were going to mount any fight at that point.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think also it's kind of, you see it on both ends. When the threes are falling, obviously it gives that team confidence, and it's a deflating thing when you're on the wrong side of it. And that was one of the things, too, I think Indiana had a really tough time with, and we may see this more going forward, maybe not to the same degree, but it just seemed like there were times when Fort Wayne had four, maybe even five guys on the floor who were capable of hitting threes, and certainly they did, you know, hitting 17 the other night. But, you know, as we've seen with the struggles in guarding the three and really being disciplined in your assignments, I mean, that's been a real problem. And when a team can put that many guys who are not only capable of hitting threes, but are actually hitting threes, it seemed to be just this a recipe for disaster. I mean, there were a lot of things at play, but I think that was also certainly one of them.
How big of an adjustment do you feel like it is for these players to go from the, I don't necessarily know how you would describe Tom Crean's defense, but, you know, they switched everything. There was a lot of freedom given, and this system is just completely opposite. Is this performance, the uneven performances that we're seeing, where, you know, there were, I think, four games Jared mentioned earlier where Indiana had held their opponent to their less than their season average in points per possession, and then you go to the Fort Wayne game where Fort Wayne just pretty much does everything they want. Is it lack of grasping the concepts of what Archie wants them to do? Is it the pack line being, I've had a lot of questions people asking me, is the pack line susceptible to three pointers given up? And how do you maybe describe what you're seeing in terms of the defensive struggles at this point?
Yeah, I think it's a few different things. I'm not so versed in coaching to really break down the pack line and know for sure whether it's this susceptible. Although you really look around the modern game and the three ball is just so important, and
right,
teams really prioritize it now. You know, I think there's a lot of factors involved, but you know, the one thing that a lot of people who I do trust that they do say is that it takes time. And this was always going to be a transitional year, from the sense that it takes a year or so to really grasp the pack line. And not only that, just to really grasp the discipline and the attention to detail that it requires. I mean, again, this is, I don't mean this as a slight to Tom Crean, but I mean, this was a program and players who just didn't grasp defense for the last few years. I mean, it just wasn't there. They practiced it. They taught it. I can't explain exactly how they taught it and what wasn't showing up and what was, but it is a 180 degree difference, I think, from what these guys are used to. And this is not to make excuses, but I think it is a real reason that this team is just not there yet defensively. I think, given Archie's track record, I think it has the potential to get there eventually. Maybe not this year. And, you know, if it is, it'll probably be very late. But yeah, I just think it takes time. It's going to take time for these guys to really get it. And especially, I think they're still trying to flush away some bad habits. I mean, I was really interested. It was a good question from a fan a few weeks ago on Archie's radio show, just asking about some bad habits. And, you know, the one bad habit that he said he's still trying to get, still trying to flush out of this program is just, I don't know if I'm quoting him here. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm not, but more or less the fact that just you can't afford to be lazy defensively. You have to understand that it's every single possession you got to lock down. And again, this was not a program that really grasped that or really took that to heart. I mean, we just didn't see it for the last few years. So I think it just takes time. And as a neutral observer, I'm willing to let it play out and just kind of see how it takes shape over the next few weeks and obviously months and year, most likely.
Yeah, I think this three-game stretch that Indiana is now going to play the second of three here at home, I think a lot of people were looking at this as, you know, chance to win three games, maybe get to 9-5, go into Wisconsin. That obviously is out the window now. What do you think we can learn from these next two home games? Obviously, Thursday, Indiana is going to host Tennessee Tech, and then next week they'll play Youngstown State before going to Wisconsin. I'm kind of in the camp of I'm not necessarily going to say that they've bounced back if they win these next two games. I'm more looking ahead to maybe the game at Wisconsin to see where this team is, because you know these are two games against lesser opponents that they should win. What do you feel like we can learn out of these next two games?
No, I think I'm in exact agreement with you. I think that losing to Fort Wayne in the fashion that they did, it just kind of torpedoed this three-game run at home here, where I don't think you really learn a whole lot from Tennessee Tech and Youngstown. You know, I just don't think these are games that really give you any sort of a barometer on the direction of the team. I think it's going to be January 2nd when we get our next real, you know, look at, all right, what have they processed in the week since December 18th? You know, I just don't think there's a whole lot to be gained from, you know, making any sort of pronouncements about, you know, the direction of the team coming off Fort Wayne, you know, beating Tennessee Tech and beating Youngstown State. I just don't think that these games really present that opportunity. Obviously, you'd like it to see Indiana come out and just, you know, run right through these guys. But as far as what we learn, I think it's still going to be a couple weeks until we really see just what the team has processed, you know, coming off Notre Dame and Fort Wayne.
Well, Mike, we appreciate the time. Mike is currently in the middle of early football signing day stuff for the Herald Times. You can read him at Herald Times Online. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Miller HT. We always enjoy talking with you, Mike, and you do a terrific job in your coverage. So thank you for taking the time. And fans, you can head over to the Herald Times Online and read all of Mike's coverage from signing day. So we'll look forward to that. And thanks again, Mike, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.